This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We have a COVID tyrant who apparently pleaded guilty. We'll talk about that. Liz Cullen is here with the Derek Chauvin update. We'll talk about primary elections from last night. What lessons can we take from that? All that and more coming up on I'm Right. All right. So as we talk primary elections, we had a bunch of primary elections last night. Let's keep this in mind. I'm a political nerd. You're a political nerd. That's why we're both here talking, right? And because we're obsessed with this stuff to some degree, all of us to some degree are obsessed with this stuff, we want to take lessons from every time there's a primary, every time there's a midterm, every time there's a presidential election. What we want to do, I do this too, we want to break it down into something simple. It was simple. And we can take 30,000-foot views of things, and we're about to, and notice trends and the reason behind trends, but keep this in mind. Always keep this in mind as a valuable lesson to learn. Every single race has its own story. Every single race, every single primary, every single special election, every single general election, and oftentimes, because you don't live everywhere, I don't live everywhere, I'm in Texas. Oftentimes, because we're not in that congressional district, we don't know that this candidate that we think looks good actually sucked, or he was lazy, or he didn't raise money. We don't know that the Democrat who's currently in office, maybe they have good constituent services, and they show up at a bunch of different town halls and pancake breakfasts, and they're in the... But we don't know these things. I don't know these things, and you don't know these things. So every race tells... It has its own story to tell, all right? So... Let's begin. First, couple big ones. Byron Donalds won his Florida primary to be the next governor of Florida last night. No surprise there, unless the sky falls, unless November is really, really bad for us, which I guess there's a chance it could be. Looks like Byron Donalds will be the next governor of Florida. Okay, well, that was no surprise. Vindman, that tubby dork, the one who got Donald Trump impeached, he lost. Now, this is an interesting case because Vindman had a ton of money, spent a ton of money. This is not one of those guys, well, no one ever heard from him. He spent millions and millions of dollars. So who did he lose to? Well, he lost to one of these DSA nutball communist candidates. These DSA candidates are winning, not all the time. Some have been held off. Another Florida election had them held off, but they're winning a lot of these elections, and they're winning when they're not matching the fundraising? Okay, so let's talk about that for a moment. Why? This is how Democrats think. When these DSA candidates, when they go on the air and they say all the kooky things they talk about, you know, no more borders, no more prisons, let's abolish the police, and the Constitution sucks. You, me, we maybe roll our eyes, maybe we scream and yell, but who knows what we do. But you know what? The average American Democrat now agrees. This is how they think. This is an ugly place to be as a country, I realize that, but this is how Democrats think, and that's why these DSA candidates keep winning Democrat primaries. They're saying things the average Democrat voter, the Democrat in your life, the DSA candidates are saying the things these people agree with and want to hear. That's the ugly truth. So let's move on and talk about some other things. Maria Salazar, Republican, Florida. You know, this lady.
If you are undocumented, and you have been in the country for more than 5 years. You do not have a criminal record. You're working and paying taxes. You can come out of the shadows with no fear and apply for the dignity status.
But don't touch the nannies or the gardeners or the ones who are picking up the jalapeno peppers or the oranges or the berries or the ones in the dairy houses. Come on. Those people are helping us eat better, cheaper homes, cheaper vegetables, and better fruits. So those are the ones that we are trying to give a dignified status.
We need to also give dignity to those people who are in the country. And those are the people that I represent. We're talking about 13, 15 million people who are, most of them Hispanics, I would say 85%, who speak my language, look like me, and sound like me, that are contributing with the economy of this country, and they live in the shadows.
Obviously, we need to defeat that woman in a primary. It's not going to happen this cycle, but it's not complicated why she was elected. It's not because Donald Trump endorsed her, which is wild that the guy who's the mass deportation president would endorse this woman. But either way, she's in a district that is heavily, heavily Hispanic. She's a Hispanic. Okay, that one wasn't going to go our way. Now let's talk about really what we're here to talk about, and this is going to hurt, okay? Almost no matter what, this is going to hurt the conversation we're about to say, we're about to have here. Muhammad Ali. You know who Muhammad Ali is. Obviously, everybody knows who Muhammad Ali is. One of the greatest, if not the greatest, boxers of all time. And we know about the big highlights of Muhammad Ali's career. He knocks out Sonny Liston. Some shady things went on there. Three big fights with Joe Frazier. The Thrilla in Manila. George Foreman. We know about all the legendary Muhammad Ali stories. We love these stories. Human beings do. Not just dudes. Everybody. We love these stories. And you know what we don't talk about? Hardly ever. If Muhammad Ali's name comes up. We don't talk about how it ended. It ended poorly because fighting, professional fighting, is a young man's game. Nobody stays young forever. Father Time is undefeated. Muhammad Ali ended his career by routinely getting his brains beat in by younger, faster, stronger boxers. And honestly, I wasn't even around at the time. This is all old video that I've watched. It was heartbreaking to watch. It sucks. I mean, I grow up, my old man's showing me, you know, Ali fighting Foreman, and I'm thinking, man, that's amazing. Look at how he moves. And then you're watching Muhammad Ali get brutalized, and you think, man, that's no way for the old man to go out. In politics, when we have a politician maybe we like a lot, we can make this mistake of thinking he's always going to be hot. He's the hottest thing in the world right now. He's so popular. He's the biggest thing out there. And maybe we get caught up in that and we can convince ourselves he's always going to be hot. But trees don't grow to the sky and politicians do not stay hot forever. One day you're beating up George Foreman, the next day some low-rent fighter is beating the living crap out of you. This primary season, Donald Trump is having a rough one. And when I say a rough one, I mean this. 10 candidates this primary season who have been endorsed by Donald Trump have lost their primaries. Now, if you are a political nerd, you will know what I'm about to say is true, but I'll go ahead and drive it home just in case you don't follow all the primaries. You could go over the last two or three election cycles combined and not find 10 Trump-endorsed candidates who lost their primary. Trump is by a mile, has been, the largest, most popular voice on the right, certainly the largest, most popular voice in the Republican Party. And to earn the Donald Trump endorsement, no matter what you're running for, it could be a state legislature seat, a Congress, Senate, no matter what you're running for, to earn the Trump endorsement for years, I mean, for a decade now, has basically been winning the nomination. if you get that, if I'm the Trump candidate, I'm backed by Trump, endorsed by Trump. To have that was to be touched by God in political circles. But you are the nominee. So, what explains what we have now? What's going on? Well, I'm not saying we're at the end of the Trump era. I'm not. I'm not saying, really, that Trump is standing in the ring like an aging Muhammad Ali getting beat up by younger, stronger fighters. I'm not really saying that. But I am saying this. For the MAGA movement, the Trump movement, the America First movement, we are in a down period. There's no question about it. And look, it's undeniable. It doesn't matter how you feel about it. Our popularity right now is dipping. It's dipping quickly. And it's dipping in large part because prices are still high. It's just that simple. Donald Trump is in the White House not because you like him or I like him or because he's funny or this or that. Donald Trump is in the White House because prices were too high and people cannot afford things. They could not afford things under Joe Biden. And they were so mad about not being able to afford things that the Republicans, Donald Trump won the popular vote in the United States of America. That's how mad people were. They marched to the polls and they voted because they couldn't afford groceries and they couldn't afford gas and they couldn't afford plane tickets and they couldn't afford health insurance and they couldn't you understand? That's why people voted. That's why Donald Trump is there. And where are we now? We are, I think it's 76 days before the election. Don't quote me on that. That's not exact. But I believe we are 76 days before the midterm election. This is our messaging.
For you to pay a tiny little bit more for your gasoline, just remember, you're doing it so that a very evil country cannot have a country. Really, it's the number one state sponsor of terror in the world. We don't want to have them have a nuclear weapon. So remember that when you have to pay a little bit more, you're at $4. It's okay. I mean, it's I'm not. I'll never apologize. I did the.
We can't do this. I'm sorry. We can't do this, or we're going to get destroyed in November. There is a district in Pennsylvania that is one of, honestly, it's one of the reddest districts I've ever seen in my life. It's in Butler, where Trump was almost assassinated. Trump previously won that district by 18%, almost 19%. Last night, they had a special election, and it went to the Democrats. I know we can't put the Iran toothpaste back in the tube. I get it. We cannot. We have got to tighten up this messaging. I mean, do you want to know what the Biden administration... Do you remember what the Biden administration was saying when prices were too high? He always ran to the news and said this stuff.
Bidenomics, Biden's formula for strong economic growth from the bottom up, it's so much greater than even the experts in economic stuff expected it to be.
How are you feeling tonight? Are you feeling confident tonight? The Biden administration is crediting Bidenomics.
The economy is great. It's the Goldilocks economy. I don't recall an economy that is this good.
Our economy is doing so well.
But guess what? It's working.
Bidenomics is working.
Bidenomics is working. It is actually working.
My God, really is morning in America right now.
From your lips, Cornell, Bidenomics is changing their lives for the better.
Most economists fear the most that the United States economy is too strong.
We haven't seen an economy like this, and the Biden administration has been more successfully economically than the New Deal.
The Bidenomics, this has been the greatest economic growth of any country in the world.
They got creamed in November. I hope the bloom is not permanently off the rose. I really do. We have 2.5 more years of the Trump administration. I really do. Right now, approval ratings are in the toilet. People are angry about how much things cost. And I live in Texas. You know what the Democrat nominee, James Tallarico, is doing? He's not running ads talking about what a child tranny lover he is, although that's what he is. He's running ads of him in the grocery store holding a bag of groceries talking about affordability. If Democrats are going to talk about affordability between now and November, and we're going to tell everybody to shut up and pay $4 a gallon because it's worth it, we are going to get massacred in November, and I mean massacred. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. And remember, I don't care if you're offended. Savannah Hernandez is going to join us next. She's doing all kinds of incredible reporting about these libraries, these gorgeous libraries just overrun with filth. We'll talk to Savannah in a moment. Before we do that, let me talk to you about natural herbal supplements. You know, before I found Chalk, my wife was all about these natural herbal supplements. And I kind of rolled my eyes a lot. Oh, gosh, here we go. What's that even do, right? And she'd try to explain, but what's that even do? Finally, I partner with Chalk. I start taking a male vitality stack. What a difference in my life. I'm telling you right now, start some natural herbal supplements from Chalk, and your mood will be better. Your energy will be better. You're about to be better in every possible way. Go to chalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
This is Savannah Hernandez in front of the most expensive library in all of Texas and also one of the most terrifying and dangerous. Now, I wanted to come to the Austin Public Library because this is a $125 million taxpayer-funded library that took over 10 years to complete, and it is now completely overrun with the homeless. Now, this is a 200,000-square-foot library with six stories, and every single story has a homeless person either lounging on the furniture, in the restrooms, and causing what is quite frankly a very terrifying environment to patrons at this library. And to give you guys a quick example, I was in this library for 2 minutes today. 2 minutes. I got in the elevator and a homeless man who was clearly on drugs jumped on the elevator with me and was having some type of mental breakdown and started threatening the guy that was on the elevator as well.
You good? You're surrounding me, so you're good?
No, you're good.
Yeah. All right,
we're good. This was 2 minutes in, and then we stopped on the kids' floor, and a bunch of kids tried to get on the elevator with this guy, and I told them.
Well, sounds like things are going well in Austin. Joining me now, Savannah Hernandez, contributor, Turning Point USA. All right, Sav. First of all, $125 million for a library is stunning. Tell me what you saw.
Yeah, Jesse. So I took my little niece to this library, and I remember when it first opened, it was beautiful. It's a state-of-the-art facility, and it's supposed to be this really gorgeous tourist attraction. And when I went with a small child, we ended up getting stuck in an elevator with the homeless man, and it was just a very jarring experience. As we walked through the library, I realized how degraded it became, and I realized I needed to come and highlight what was going on and show the public and show everyone across America what our libraries have devolved into. So again, this is a $125 million library. Of course, the city also spends millions and millions of dollars every single year to continue running this library, and it's basically an active crime scene. You had a man who was given brain damage just a couple months ago after a homeless man punched him in the back of the head while he was using the computer bays. He then decided to head stomp him, leaving him with life-altering brain injuries. You also had another patron of the library who was shot while using the restroom, of course shot by a homeless man that earlier that day had gotten on the bus and eaten some meth. So that's who's going into the public libraries in Austin, Texas. And when I put this piece out, I unfortunately found out that this is not even the worst library in Austin, and that this is very much a common theme. And another thing that I discovered after this piece went live was that this is a nationwide issue. Now, I recently went to Seattle and did the exact same thing, Jesse, and it was just as horrifying of a scene. And I decided to do this because I don't understand how the most basic public amenities like a library where children are supposed to go and be able to read and explore and play during the summer is now essentially a giant homeless camp.
Yeah, libraries are for nerds anyway. Here is a little bit of that Seattle video from Sav.
Can you tell us what you're seeing?
Yeah, watch out. There's human waste here. This is urine. It's a biohazard cesspool here. There's human waste, feces, alcohol pads with blood on it, used drug baggies, fentanyl foil. Little kids will pick this up. I know when I was a little kid, I used to pick up gum and chew it. kind of disgusting, but
yeah,
got rat, rodent issues here as well. This is a toilet. This smells like a urinal. It looks like a urinal. It's a hazardous waste site. It's a disappointment considering how much we spend on these beautiful libraries. So really what they're doing is treating our public libraries like hospitals or insane asylums.
Okay, Sav, so obviously this is a thing. I'm sure if you bounced around all the libraries in the country, you'd probably see similar things. I guess my question is, how does this happen? Every time I ever raised my voice in the library, I got yelled at and asked to leave. But apparently you can just poop in them now. Can you help me understand?
Yeah, Jesse. So first off, that Seattle clip that we played was probably the most tame portion of that doc. It's on my YouTube channel right now. Sav says, please go watch it because the entire thing is insane. I'm walking through the portion where the children's section is located, and there is a man that is leaned over in what West Coasters call the fentanyl fold. You go through the library and they have injectable Narcan that's publicly available to anybody, so a child could go and grab these things. And by the way, these are large syringes that are offered at this library, accessible to anybody. You don't need ID. You don't even need to ask for it. It's just right there. So that's what's going on in these libraries. And again, Jesse, what young Americans are very much disenfranchised with as of late is the degradation of not only American culture and the country, but our cities as well. We feel like we can't even go to a freaking library and enjoy it anymore. Everything feels so degraded in the modern day. And this is just an example of that. This is a result of toxic empathy, of politicians who refuse to do their job, politicians who I would venture to say that this is a form of fraud where you're spending hundreds of billions of dollars on the city, and this is the result of it. What you're seeing on screen right now is Sharps containers that were put in the bathroom of the Seattle library because drug use is so prolific in these bathrooms that they've had to start providing the containers because you had a janitor that got his finger pricked, and then he had to go to the hospital and get tested for HIV. You also have the city now spending money on putting specific sensors in the bathroom that can detect fentanyl and meth smoke because drug use is so prolific. And instead of just going in and enacting the basic library rules that are already in place, this toxic empathy culture refuses to do that and is enabling this type of behavior. So I wanted to go and again highlight the library specifically because, like you said, Jesse, the library is supposed to be the place for nerds. It's supposed to be the place where a mom can take her kid and say, hey, go run loose. This is the safest place in the city. Like, go have fun, go explore. But you can't even do that anymore because you have people using fentanyl in the restroom and the city spending hundreds of millions of dollars to make sure that this happens. Because by the way, in Seattle, I think we were about a block away from the harm reduction center where they hand out all of the drug paraphernalia for these drug addicts to use.
The harm reduction center, that is just freaking glorious. All right, Sav, let's shift gears here, and you'll have to pardon the puns. We're about to talk about driving big rigs. You've been all over this story. These foreigners, dirty foreigners who get CDLs and then go wipe out American families on the highway. What's the update on all this?
Sure, Jesse. So apparently you have multiple, of course, blue states that are now trying to push back against the FMCSA and the DOT, who are requesting information on who is driving on U.S. roads. Of course, these states are like, yeah, we just don't want you to be able to utilize that to deport the illegal immigrants who shouldn't be, one, in this country, and two, driving on our roads to begin with. So there's a big legal battle happening right now. And again, regarding what the DOT has actually been doing with these CDLs, they have taken tens of thousands of drivers off of the road for having CDLs that they were not qualified for. You do have the English language proficiency requirement that has now been enacted. So people who, you know, can't read English or maybe can't read our road signs are being taken off the streets. However, I am hearing from insiders in the industry that they feel like, okay, it's good that we are seeing these numbers, but this problem is so prolific that we are barely making a dent in it. I know a lot of people are calling for every single truck stop to have the English language proficiency requirement or to have ICE at every single truck stop so that we are monitoring everybody who's driving these big rigs, because keep in mind that just the numbers that we know of, you had about 200,000 illegal immigrant drivers that were granted CDLs. And, quick refresher for the audience, you have states like Pennsylvania, New York, a lot of these California, that were getting these migrants CDLs that they were not qualified for. And this issue was even worse because you had migrants, sometimes who were here legally, sometimes illegally, who were creating these fake CDL mills, aka fake schools, where they would import migrants from their country and then they would fast track them through the school and basically be like, cool, yeah, you're qualified for a CDL, even though you just got behind the wheel a week ago. Here's a paper, take it to the DMV, they'll give you your CDL and you're on the streets. So the DOT and the FMCSA actively working to fix these problems. But of course, we are seeing the pushback from a lot of these Democrat states and these Democrat politicians who, for some reason, think that they can circumvent federal immigration law. I mean, we've seen this since the start of the Trump administration, this consistent battle and fight to keep the most unsafe drivers on our road to continue killing Americans for some reason.
Sav, keep on them. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Jesse.
All right, let's go to Minnesota. Derek Chauvin is just so unjust what happened to that man. Talk to Liz Collin about that in a moment. Before we talk to Liz and get a hot update from her, let's talk about Pure Talk. Speaking of foreigners, when you get a hold of your wireless company, and we all have to from time to time, got to get a hold of customer service, where does that person sound like they're from? Does that sound like somebody who's an American? Or does it sound like your big wireless provider took an American job and sent it overseas? My wireless provider, Pure Talk, they're on the same 5G network as yours, so I'm not dropping calls. I pay way less, and they hire Americans. That's what happens when you have a two-tour Vietnam veteran leading your company. Go to puretalk.com/JesseTV. And make the switch today. We'll be back.
I'm James O'Keefe, and this is vouching for seven other Muslims at a Minneapolis polling booth.
The question about the vouching program, yeah, vouching, I can vouch for them, but they are not registered. That's okay, that's fine. Again, can I bring five more from up to eight people? Okay, that's a good thing, the vouching. Yeah, I vouch for them.
Oh, great.
Is that okay?
Yes.
How does that work?
Well, if you're all in the same precinct
yes.
and you are already registered, which it looks like you are, then you can vouch for them as ID for them.
Oh, good.
She says to me, I says they do not need ID. She says, you are the ID.
He is the ID.
See, I am the ID.
And no ID needed. I just vouch for them.
Well, it's you're good. The ID.
I am the ID. It's good. How many people may I vouch for?
Eight.
I
thought it was six.
I can vouch for eight people. Mm-hmm. Eight people. No ID. We come right back. Thank you.
I don't know what's funnier, the disguise or the accent, but I am curious about what this vouching thing is all about. I never even heard of this before. I bet Liz knows. Joining me now, Liz Collins, senior reporter, Alpha News. Okay, Liz, vouching, what?
Yeah, it sounds just as crazy as it really is, I think, Jesse. We've been reporting on these controversial voting laws in Minnesota for years over at Alpha News. I guess we didn't have the idea to go in full Muslim garb to a voting booth. But this viral video obviously drawing all kinds of renewed attention on this very controversial, it really has been for quite some time, this vouching law. It's led to threats now. We have a legal action by the Secretary of State, Steve Simon, against those reporters behind it all. But the state law says an individual seeking to become registered to vote on Election Day can confirm their residency simply by having a registered voter vouch for them. That's this vouching. Registered voters, they can vouch for up to eight people. You heard it there at the booth. Staff at residential facilities, they can vouch for an unlimited number of facility residents. Steve Simon, we have reported, as I've said on this before, in previous statements that the Secretary of State telling us at Alpha News, vouching is only used to provide proof of a potential voter's residence in the precinct, and the potential voter must still provide their Minnesota driver's license or ID card number or the last four digits of their social security number. What's interesting, that's not what these poll workers were telling James O'Keefe and Cam Higmy, obviously, in their videos. And there has been some newly unearthed videos online you'll see as well where they're teaching this two different poll workers and saying no ID is needed. So I think many of us on the side of sanity and common sense here in Minnesota are pretty glad that this has been put under the microscope and the spotlight is pretty glaring on this law. But I will say there's a lot more of them, so I hope these guys will come back.
Liz, I would venture a guess that this isn't the only problem in Minnesota's elections, is it?
Yeah, actually, what's interesting is here's another thing in Minnesota, Jesse. You don't have to have a physical address to register to vote. You can just say, I live down by 26th Street by the tree. That is, of course, to accommodate the homeless and people who may not have a current residence. And again, I know it sounds like I'm kidding, but that is also a law in Minnesota. And also, they used to have something called this cast vote record. Basically, it would allow people to go in and take a look at the machines after you go ahead and cast your vote. They could go ahead, open up that machine data, and you could look at basically an x-ray of every vote to make sure they were counted correctly. That doesn't happen anymore. That is now a law. Also, if a machine has been used in a precinct before to vote, they have to use a voting machine from now on, because a lot of these municipalities, towns and such have said, gosh, there's all kinds of problems with these machines. We don't know what's going on. They're hooked up to, internet modems, and we want to be able to check it. Well, they've taken a lot of that transparency away in Minnesota.
Liz, tell me about Derek Chauvin. I've asked you about him about 1,000 times, and I can't help it. The guy is rotting in prison, clearly doesn't deserve it. The facts say he doesn't deserve it. Do we have any update on getting this guy out of the clink?
Yeah, Jesse, actually coming to you at a very good time. I would call this a bombshell court filing, and I don't use that term lightly after covering this case now for so long. But these are allegations of fraud pointing squarely at Governor Tim Walz and Attorney General Keith Ellison in this case, which I know doesn't perhaps sound shocking knowing what we know now about Walz and Ellison. But this is a petition that was just filed Tuesday in Hennepin County Court. That Greg Joseph, who represents Derek Chauvin, he's calling the charges against Chauvin illegal, the trial a fraud, and he's asking for the charges to be dismissed. So what happened here is a grand jury never indicted Derek Chauvin on second-degree murder. That was Keith Ellison, who basically was appointed by Governor Walz to swoop in because the Hennepin County prosecutor said, you know what, we're not comfortable with this more serious charge against Chauvin. We're not comfortable even charging the three other officers at all. All of a sudden, these maneuvers are happening behind the scenes. Ellison moves in, charges Derek Chauvin with second-degree murder, and guess what? It was not by a grand jury indictment. And the law says, in fact, that's exactly what it needed to be. And his attorney, he's only been working with Derek for a couple of years, recently just discovered this, sort of putting the case back together again from the very beginning, and filed this petition. We've seen Elon Musk now tweet about it just today, saying free Derek, but saying that basically everything that followed from these illegal charges is also illegal, including this show trial that was put on in Hennepin County Court. So the judge will have 45 days to come back with some kind of response to this petition. But I will say it's an awfully good argument. And in fact, a police officer in Minnesota, the charges against him were recently dismissed based on this as well.
All right, Liz, let's talk about I want to make sure I read this, the outstanding refugee by the name of Salman Ahmed Elmi. Apparently, this outstanding refugee found himself in a teeny bit of trouble recently. What did he do?
You know, I will be honest. I was talking to your producer. I'm like, I'm just getting these all mixed up at this point because it's a case that it's such a common theme that so many people are just rewarded and then they find out that they've defrauded the system by millions of dollars. So this is one I will be honest that we have yet to report on at Alpha News, so I don't know much about. But I know that some of the other stories, just reading kind of sadly, a similar story. What is the award again there, Jesse?
Outstanding refugee.
Right, and he's responsible for some Medicaid fraud. I know you're shocked.
Yeah. What a shock. Liz, come back and join us again. I appreciate it. All right. There is still so much to get to. It's a gigantic news day. We'll dig into more next. at least a tiny bit of accountability is something we have right now. Former Fauci advisor David Morenz apparently pleaded guilty to, let me see if I read this right, conspiracy to defraud the United States by hiding COVID origin records and invading FOIA. That sounds bad. Let's ask Alex about it. Joining me now, Alex Sawyer, editor-at-large of the Washington Times. Alex, that sounds really bad. What did he do?
Yeah, well, you know, there's been a lot of coverage of this surrounding Dr. Fauci, his testimony, his pardon. We knew about this gentleman. I think he had previously testified before Congress. So the issue was that he supposedly was instructed to how to hide government records, conceal government records about correspondence related to the potential funding of the gain of function research. In terms of what the narrative has been, what they were pushing out with the Wuhan lab leak. So, of course, this was a point of contention with lawmakers and Dr. Fauci. They want to know, of course, or wanted to know how more information on this. Did they instruct Mr. Morenz to do so from his communications and what it appears the government has and why he pled to this? Is that it looks like he did, in fact, go about hiding these correspondence. And it seemed like he was instructed to do so. The kicker here, in terms of, you know, this low-hanging fruit, I guess people could say, it's kind of like, well, somebody was held accountable, but everybody's question is, well, what about Dr. Fauci? What's next for him because of that pardon he received? You know, I'm going to say this is an example of a conspiracy charge that you could see some states possibly try to go after. What do I mean by that? Do you recall Fulton County District Attorney, definitely not a doctor, Fani Willis? She had a RICO case, conspiracy, basically corruption against President Trump and it is like 17 other co-defendants, where she tried to say they conspired in relation to the 2020 election. Of course, that case never went to trial. It was dismissed. But these states have RICO laws, conspiracy laws. And so why is this important? A federal pardon does not apply to state court. So there could be some state investigations that look at what we have here with Mr. Morenz, I believe, and see where we go from there. Is there any sort of conspiracy or RICO case they could bring at a state level, separate and apart from what's been going on in the federal court, that would then be able to get towards Dr. Fauci himself, since everybody's asking about if there will ever be accountability for him?
Okay. Shoot me straight here, Alex, because I've heard so many different things on this. Is there a chance this has legs at the state level? I understand the federal pardon, but what's the reality of this? Are we looking at some, you know, jerkwater charge where he gets a fine or something like that? Or is there a chance that, I mean, he's in real legal trouble?
I think it's going to take a while to play out. The law always does. Okay. I think that you hear people like Senator Tuberville, he's running for governor of Alabama. He's talked about wanting to see the state of Alabama courts hold Dr. Fauci accountable. I think you will have some politicians pushing for that, whether it's something that they really make a reality after come November, I think is the big question. I've asked around about what kind of charges at state levels could come. One mention is fraud, defrauding the American public when you have information, but you don't, you know, share that. In Florida, there's an interesting kind of, it looks like, piece that there might have been some sort of grant money. I don't know if it was the University of Florida. It was a few weeks ago when I was reading this. But one of the institutions down there, there seemed to be some money that was given, which would make a financial interest when Dr. Fauci was down there kind of giving speeches, giving commentary on the news about COVID, giving his guidelines, his guidance while potentially profiting or having some sort of financial stake there. So I think the Florida is really looking at what they could do to go after Fauci. We shall see. Of course, I spent much of my time during 2020 down in Florida because it was very much like 2019. They only masked and had things closed for a couple weeks. It was quite great, and they came out faring rather well, all things considered.
Yeah, that beach did treat me well in Florida during COVID. All right, let's shift gears here and talk about this E. Jane Carroll nut job. This woman is clearly crazy, and apparently there's an update on this case. What is it?
Yeah, so also I think the Florida Beach has treated Michigan Governor Gretchen Wilson, whatever her name is, well, the Democrat. Whitmer. She traveled down there to vacation when her state was closed. I always love to bring that up.
Yes, of course.
But yeah, so E. Jean Carroll, she had two defamation cases against President Trump. One was in 2019 when he denied the allegations that she made that he had sexually abused her or harassed her in a department store in the 1990s. That came out in an article. He was president. Of course, he was asked about it. He responded. That's his argument, is I was president. I had to respond to news of the day. But yet she sued him for defamation. That got caught up in the courts, Jesse, for a very long time, because the president argued that the DOJ should be defending him because he responded in his official capacity. Side note, New York then went ahead and passed a law allowing rape victims to bring suits past the statute of limitations, if you recall. So that's where the second lawsuit came in. E. Jean Carroll jumped on that, renewed her defamation claim, said in 2022 he continued to deny her accusations, so therefore that's defamation. She got a $5 million reward there. In the first case, it ended up she got like an $83 million reward. So both of them went to the Supreme Court. The first one, related to the $83 million one, is still on appeal. The justices have not decided whether or not they will take that one up. It would take four justices to do so for oral arguments to be scheduled. The $5 million one, the justices said both twice, I think Trump asked them a second time, to reconsider it, and they have said no, without comment. It was a list of orders that said, you know, cases that have been denied, and the $5 million defamation suit was one of them.
All right, let's shift gears again and talk about this Trump ballroom thing, which somehow the Supreme Court and the DOJ are now involved in all this. What?
Yeah, so, you know, I guess people don't want to have a nicer White House. They don't want this. They want us to keep using tents, I guess, out in the back for when we host diplomats and foreign presidents there. But long story short, this, of course, like everything we talk about, goes to the Supreme Court because it is the Trump lawfare era. So there's a case now where whether or not President Trump can continue the ballroom construction, his administration is saying, please let us continue, despite these lower courts trying to block the construction, which has already been started. I think it's supposed to be near some sort of completion. There's been a significant amount done within the period of time, the deadline and the goal. So, you know, they're looking to get the Supreme Court to go ahead and jump in and say, oh, we're going to block what this lower court has put on hold. I think the lower court had put on hold the ballroom aspect, whereas the construction of the bunker below, I think, was allowed to continue. If I recall correctly, there's been some different reporting and rulings on this from my, you know, coverage and monitoring the ballroom situation. One of the interesting things here is I think it was back when President Truman, when he went ahead and authorized this, any reconstruction or updating of the White House, he had to ask Congress to do so because he used public money. This is different. This is all private donations. So, you know, you have, I think it was one of a Trump appointee on the district court wrote in a dissent that there is no real financial harm to, I believe it's like a National Historic Society that's challenged this, saying that they haven't put up any money. Like, the American public isn't harmed by this because, of course, this is private donations. So it's one of those issues that I think the Supreme Court could say, possibly, if they go ahead and jump in, that, yeah, like, there's no standing here, there's no legal injury. The president is not using tax dollars to do this. This is donations, and it's his home, so we will see.
We will see. Keep monitoring the situation for us, Alex. Thank you. I appreciate it. All right. Lighten the mood. Next. All right. It's time to lighten the mood. And I just have to tell you, these people and the things they can do with technology, it's amazing.
Princess Peach owns this castle. Princess Peach is really amazing. Let me tell you something. She is an amazing woman. I have captured her. He's a great penguin, and I love him, really. However, there's something very bad that could happen to him. He could be hurt very badly. Can I be honest with you? Let me be honest with you. We're gonna bomb the shit out of him, Mario. They say this is the Rainbow Road. The Goomba said I would do very well as a homosexual. And I said, no way. I was told these docks are very dire. But you know what else is dire? The state of this great nation, the Mushroom Kingdom. To be honest, this is a shithole country, Mario. Look at this place. These are not good people. You know what we should call this place? Mario Lago. Mario Lago. Do you like that? Mario Lago.
I'll see you tomorrow. I would thank you for coming to my YouTube channel, but I know how brilliant it is, and I know you love it here. So subscribe and watch. We're going to start really ramping things up and putting some funny stuff, some interesting stuff out there, some collaborations. Either way, my YouTube channel is officially the place to be. So stick around.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.